role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely on artists to inspire us, move us, and compel us to dazzle and rearrange our ways of thinking about absolutely everything.
But I just had this vision of bringing people from across our community together.
The expressions of who we are as a culture and a people.
The historical archive of our times.
Artists create the future, 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 future.
Welcome to the Best of Artbeat, your weekly arts and culture podcast, which champions the best creative minds and projects in Boulou and beyond, with me, Beck Bowman. Today on the show, we hear from Nara Ludbay, author of The Silent Heroes, which pays tribute to the unsung heroes in our community, grandparents taking care of their grandchildren. Danielle Raphael chats with author Jane Tuttle about her latest memoir, My Sweet Guillotine. This is a book about returning to the city of love after a traumatic accident. You are listening to Artbeat on RTRFM 92.1. I'm Beck Bowman. And now we are going to be talking about a new book being released through the Society of Women Writers WA. It happened, the official launch happened on the 19th of July, and we are going to find out more about it. It's called The Silent Heroines. It is a book that explores the plight of grandparents who look after their grandchildren, and author Nara Ludbay is here to talk to us about it now. Nara, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Beck, for giving me the opportunity to talk about grandparents who are raising grandchildren and their struggles on how they manage to survive under difficult circumstances. Yeah, thank you. That wonderful opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Tell me a little bit about how this book came to be.
Well, I started writing this book probably about 5 or 7 years ago. I poured sweat and blood into this book. Obviously, it was difficult because my English is my second language, so that was pretty tough to overcome. But when I became one of those grandparents and I started taking my granddaughter to daycare centers, I realized that I'm not the only one. Thousands of us all over Western Australia alone, and tens of thousands, probably even more, all over Australia. The problem, it's only growing, back, and it's not going to get better.
What is the... You've referred to it as a problem that is growing. What is happening to the parents in between these generations that they're no longer able to look after their children?
Well, because in our society now, mental health is obviously prevalent, and mental health usually leads to self-medication, alcohol, drugs, and that creates a perfect storm, and usually sometimes, in many cases, biological parents can't cope. So the grandparents are the safety net who take care of those misfortunate children and provide safe haven and safe home for them. So that's one of the reasons. But the most important reason why I wrote this book is that I like, my aim was first to create awareness about grandparents because they are not getting any support from federal government and they're struggling on pension and they're relying on food banks and charity. But I didn't want my book to be a statistical report. I want my book to be about grandparents who are fun, who think of themselves as young, 60 is new 50, and they don't see themselves as old. Only young people see them as old.
So it's very much about creating a view of these of grandparents as people who are looking for support to be able to raise their grandchildren and not kind of either pity or being ignored.
Oh, of course. Look, grandparents do it because they love their grandchildren. That's their first and utmost thing. But, of course, if they would get some support from government, that would make their lives easier. But the aim of this book was also to create awareness that grandparents are fun. One of my characters in a book says, look, Jenny is only 60. Wait till you get to Lighty, then you forget about the romance. She's lucky she can still have a fellow in her life. So all people are still young in heart. So that this was the aim of the book as well, to portray grandparents, that they are not some old grannies that do knitting all afternoon. They take kids to sport. They do the activities. They have sleepovers with grandchildren coming over, same as the young mums do.
We are talking to Nada Ludbay about her new book, The Silent Heroines. It is a tribute to the grandparents who are caring for their grandchildren. Nada, you've decided to fictionalise the stories that are in this book. What was behind that decision?
Well, the reason why I fictionalised this story was mostly to protect the characters involved. Some of the grandparents are protective of their privacy, and some of the grandparents also feel maybe even on some sort of guilt, maybe thinking, what if I'm in this situation because maybe my parenting wasn't good enough first time round? So some parents do feel a bit of shame too. Unreasonable, of course, because we all do the best we can parent, and we all learn parenting as we go. So that might have been one of the other reasons. The other reason was that I, to protect the privacy of people, and as well, I don't want government bodies to come and knock on a door and say, well, you shouldn't say that or shouldn't say that. However, whoever reads the book will realize that you can't make up those stories because they are far too truthful to be able to come up with such a written stories. They're based on facts.
So where can people find your book?
Well, just to let you know, my book launch, my mind big book launch, is happening on 12th of October at the Rockingham Yacht Club. Down here, that one of my characters in the book says, this is new paradise. She used to live in Cottesloe, and then she says, oh, well, I moved to another Cottesloe. I said, what do you mean? She says, oh, down south to Rockingham. So the book launch will be on 12th of October at Rockingham Yacht Club from 12 to 3 p.m. The book can be purchased for $20. Or it could be purchased online. But listen back, most grandparents think that online is for washing. That's why one of my characters was selling recycled bottles to make some money, and the young chap didn't have cash to give her because these days everyone uses plastic money. And she said to him, excuse me, young man, washing online is for washing as far as I'm concerned, and net is for fishing, and web is for spiders, and I have so many spiders on my washing line and I can't afford to pay pest control people to come over. So that's what grandparents think. Grandparents also think that wooden spoon was a better way of raising grandchildren than all this nonsense about 1, 2, 3 parenting and so much talking and nothing, you know, just no discipline that they can't implement the way we used to.
I'm sure that, you know, there are as many different kinds of grandparents as there are kinds of people in the world. So people can buy it online if they want to, if that's something that they're interested in doing, or they can head on down to the book launch in Rockingham. It's on the 20th of October, did you say?
No, 12th. Wednesday, 12th of October at the Rockingham Yacht Club, because Wednesday, every second Wednesday of the month, the Rockingham Yacht Club usually have a ladies' lunch, and most of the ladies who turn up, they are retired ladies. So they are all keen to know what I have written about old people.
Amazing.
They are young at heart.
And what time is that?
That is from 12 to 3 p.m. And finger food will be provided free of charge, and also glass of champagne on arrival.
You heard it here first. You can get along to Rockingham Yacht Club to see Nada talk about her book, The Silent Heroines. Nada, thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Beck, thank you. I am honored that you've given me an opportunity. I presume you are a young lady, so spread the word about the oldies who are young at heart.
I absolutely will.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
That was Nada Ludbay talking about her book, The Silent Heroines. It is a fictionalized account of real stories of grandparents who are raising their grandchildren.
The role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely.
Yeah, it feels good. It's always an interesting feeling when you write something that's come from such a personal part of your life, to be walking around the street and knowing that everyone around you, well, a lot of people have read it. I know with Paris or Die, people would ask me how I felt about, such an exposing memoir being read by the people in my small town. I live in a coastal Victorian town at the moment, and I run a bookshop. So, but it's funny. It doesn't really feel like it's my, it doesn't feel like me. You know what? By the time you start to write a memoir or a book of any kind, I think that the more drafts and the redrafts that happen, the sort of further it becomes from your actual true life experience. So it just feels like a book to me, and it's exciting. It's sort of strange. It's amazing how a book becomes an object, with a cover and a back blurb and design. I'm wrapped. I'm just wrapped to have another book out in the world.
That's great to hear. It's really exciting. I can only imagine the thrill of releasing something, and something so personal, which you touched on. It is a book that deals with quite an intense trauma, and it's interesting that you say that you almost feel distanced from it. We might touch on that a little bit later, but Jane, I'm wondering if we could talk about, I guess, the experience that the book centres around. The memoir is part of a Paris series that centres on your experiences in Paris, and there's a particular accident that happens while you were there. I'm wondering if you could talk us through what actually happened in that apartment block in Paris.
Yeah, sure. So essentially, in a nutshell, coming right out with it, I basically was almost decapitated in an old Paris stairwell, one of those old stairwells with the lifts that sort of run up and down the middle. They were basically plonked into these old buildings in the 1950s, and they often aren't fully protected. They don't have, they sort of, you can touch them as you're walking up. I'm sure that most of your listeners would know what this is or have seen them themselves. And I was on this stairwell at night. It was dark. The lift actually ran dead silently down, up and down the middle of the stairwell. And I kind of ignored it. I didn't really notice it was there. And a friend's daughter called out to me from downstairs, and I leant over the banister and basically was almost collected by the descending elevator. Fortunately, it stopped just at the point that it hit my head. So I was trapped, but I managed to pull my head out and survived. I broke my neck basically, but I managed somehow to survive and to tell the story.
Yeah, which is
so I was very lucky.
Amazing, Jane, and thank you for sharing that, just to give us an idea of what actually happened, because that is, I guess, the crux of the story. And My Sweet Guillotine follows on from your other novel, which is To Paris or Die, and it's kind of the follow-on from that. And in this memoir, you do return to Paris after that period of recovering from your injury. And I guess I'm wondering, and I'm sure many other people are wondering, what made you go back after something, I guess, so horrifying?
Yes, that's a great question, and one that has been often asked of me. And at the time, I remember quite quickly I returned to Paris. I spent 3 or 4 months recovering down here in Point Lonsdale with my dad, and basically was offered a job working with a theatre company to direct a show in Portugal, and then to go, which would then tour to Paris. And I as soon as I was able to fly again, I was back on the plane back overseas to Paris. And it's funny because it really, I didn't blame Paris for the accident at all. I blamed myself, and I definitely had a mental block when it came to going to the area where the accident happened, or going past the hospital where I spent time recovering after the accident. But other than that, I felt like my life in Paris just kind of picked back up. Well, that's what I wanted, and that's what the crux of this book is about, is that feeling of after a great trauma, wanting to sort of go back on with your life as if nothing happened, and the difficulty of achieving that when you are carrying something, deeply traumatic inside of you. So I was definitely keen to pick up my life and go on and really act like everything was fine when it really wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. An experience I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, especially when it comes to something like trauma or even grief, which is, you know, as people that have experienced that, it's something that's not linear. It's something that doesn't kind of follow a structure. How do you process something like that happening to you? You spent the time in Paris kind of unpacking that. So how did that unfold for you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that when I first came back, when I came back to Paris to study in the theatre school for the story of Paris or Die, when that takes place, I was grieving the recent death of my mother. So I already was arriving in Paris with a whole lot of pain, and trying desperately to disappear into this other culture. And so I suppose with my Sweet Guillotine, it was a similar, in a way, going back after the accident was similar to that. It wasn't unusual to me to be going back to Paris with, a whole lot of grief and trauma inside my body. The city really helps. It had already helped me before to deal with this, great pain. And I think that in the second episode of going back with this other kind of trauma and grief, there was another way that it healed me. I never felt anger or hurt from Paris. I suppose I felt like it was a real healing place for me in many ways.
It's a paradigm shifting thing what happened to you. And I also wondered, after something like that happens, even before, are you a spiritual person, or are you very much in the vein of the existentialist, like Sartre, the very classic Parisian absurdist and things like that? Where do you fit in?
Oh, yeah, I am definitely, I think for most of my young or my late teens and early 20s, spent a lot of time absolutely buried in the existentialists.
Yeah.
And definitely am not. I was always interested. I'm always interested in the little signs. I definitely felt that, for example, with the accident, there was a lot of parts to it that are very mysterious and I really cannot fathom. And to this day, even the lawsuit that I took on, the lawyers and the experts could not for the life of them figure out how I survived. There were several stages of the event that just are inexplicable. And, I do have this feeling that my mother was there. They could never explain why the lift stopped just above my head. It stopped on the second floor, but nobody had called it to stop. And my only explanation was either that it was my superhuman strength and will to live, which made everybody laugh when I said that to the lift experts, who said, oh, yeah, as if. But the other part of me always believed that, maybe it was mum that pushed the button, because it just doesn't have an explanation. So I guess I do have a sort of spiritual side to myself that thinks things like that and really truly believes them, but really I do have a deep I am a skeptic in the school of the
in the of the existentialists that really we are just here and then we die and that's it.
Yeah, I hear you. I want to go with the fact that you're incredibly strong, Jane. But we'll leave that to the universe. While you were in Paris, you did spend a lot of time kind of reveling in the culture. You're a thespian yourself. You worked in theatre and the arts generally. Something that I would argue Australia doesn't have is, you know, that same kind of quintessential arts and culture. I'm wondering what your thoughts about how the arts function in Australia are, and maybe what we can learn from places like Paris.
Yeah, it's such a wonderful place in that sense because it just has such a deep history of support for the arts. Everybody in countries like France or, you know, other European countries, but particularly France, where they have enormous music, classical music, you know, all kinds of music, theatre, opera, dance, you know, they have such a culture of that. And people go, everybody goes. It's not a elitist thing. It's made affordable. It's part of the, everybody goes out and sees things, and consequently artists are supported. Consequently, if you are an artist, you know, it's a lovely feeling to not have that, you know, they say, people say, what do you do? And you say, I'm an actor, and they say, all right, so, okay. And it's nothing. It's like you could be, you know, an accountant or an actor or, yeah. It's not that big a deal. Whereas here, it's always that second question of, yeah, but how do you get by? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you do? And who does she think she is, kind of thing as well.
Yeah, what's the plan
B? Have I seen you? Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if you haven't been seen on television, then you mustn't be a real actor or, you know, it's sort of, it's just such a small, and I guess that's it. It's a smaller market because, you know, look at football, you know, there's no problem with that if you say you're a footballer or, you know, because we just have such an enormous audience for that. And I think that, in these countries or in France, there is an enormous audience and it's part of their, that they need it and they, it's a general thing. So, I mean, I guess it's just that thing as well of, like, it's ingrained in society, it's ingrained in politics, whereas here it's just not. And if we don't support it from the root, from the core of our society, it disappears and people can't stay in the country if they're, you know, want to be artists because they're not supported. It's tiring and tragic a lot of the time.
Considering all that, Jane, what's your relationship with Paris like now?
Yeah, it's a very intense, longing relationship. Considering we've sort of lived a bit between the two countries for the prior to the pandemic, we just returned from 6 months over there, and so I haven't actually been back since the pandemic. I'm going back in November, and I can't wait. My relationship. I still work in France. I work in advertising as a. I do English language copywriting for French agencies. So I'm still working there and speaking French most days. But I'm really looking forward to going back. And I think it's a new era for me. I've got a daughter who's she's growing up and. She's not so keen on the sort of moving back and forward to between countries.
Sure.
So it might be more of a, until she's older, it might be more of a, you know, maybe I'm going to be the tourist ducking in and back. But I do have a deep connection with the place. It was a place where a big part of my adult self was born. I miss it like I miss a person, a mother. Like a mother figure to me in lots of ways, the city.
Well, I'm sure when you hopefully eventually do return with your daughter, you'll be an excellent tour guide and it'll, you know, welcome you back with open arms.
Yes, I'm sure it will. And I'm sure it'll have a whole lot of more surprises to throw my way.
I'm sure. Jane, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, thanks so much, Danny. It was lovely to talk with you.
The role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely on artists to inspire us, move us.